Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And welcome to the pre-draft edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldrich here. Waz in LA. What's up, sir?
I'm good, man. Just, you know, just trying to maintain, excited about free agency, which has started 4 days early, which I guess we don't care about tampering anymore. No. And excited about the draft, so I'm excited.
Let me just go on record to saying the NBA has the dumbest rules in history regarding tampering. I wrote about this a year ago. They're stupid rules. Let everybody do whatever the hell they want. They're going to do it anyway. And you're not going to find people, and you're not going to take draft picks away because you guys love transactional Twitter at the NBA. You pretend like you don't, but you love seeing all these tweets because you love people talking about your hot stove league all summer, or in this case, all winter long. So please stop it with the integrity of the game nonsense. Get rid of the stupid rules. Let people talk to whoever the hell they want to talk to. Let coaches say, hey, you know what? I'd love to have Giannis on our squad next year. Because they're calling him anyway, and you know it, and I know it, so stop lying.
Thanks.
So anyway, welcome to the show this week. The man, dudes and dudettes. Nobody knows more about the draft than Sam Vecenie. Sam, all the way from Australia, where it is 8 a.m. Wednesday as we tape this. It's the next day, so you can tell us who is going to be drafted by Minnesota since it's already Wednesday. Man, thank you for joining us.
Man, I am more than happy to come on. We've got Waz, who is just one of the best human beings, one of my favorite people.
Oh, wow.
To talk
Thank
to.
You, man.
And then we got the icon DA. Of course I'm going to make time for you guys. Come on.
Oh, dude. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. You know, and I accept the compliment, even though I still feel like it's like I'm getting the Irving Thalberg Award from the Oscars. All right, old man, you're on your way out. Here's one more award for you.
No, I mean, dude, you got an unbelievable story coming out today with Kelly, from what I've been told. So you are still in your prime.
This was fun. It was fun writing it with Kelly. That was fun. Just unloading on what's happening in Houston. What? My God. They're gone from, like, being a game away from the finals just 2 years ago to it's a teardown. We're just, everything must go. Clearance sale. It's crazy.
I wonder what changed in the last 2 years, though.
Well, you have to read the story, don't you?
Okay. Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Hoop.
Comma is
adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs. Like the Boston and Brackadoshi, I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing. Yes. Yes. And then he got their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in there.
Wozni Lembre.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies and can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoops 5-4. We have ignition.
Actually, I wish there was some cataclysmic event. It's just, you know, teams get old, guys aren't as good, you know. Their defense, they went all in a couple of years ago to try to build a team that was good enough defensively, and that just went away. And they tried this small ball, and Tillman Fertitta said, I'm not paying the tax. So get rid of all the expensive players, you know. They tried this thing that could not work against a team like the Lakers. I thought they'd be more competitive than they were, frankly, against LA in that series. And now it's time, you know, when the man looks at his watch, says it's time to go, it's time to go. But it's amazing how quickly it turns in the NBA. So I got to ask you guys before we get into the draft, obviously, what do you think the big move on Monday night was, the Jrue Holiday trade? Is that enough to keep Giannis happy, do you think?
It seems like they would have had to have his tacit approval in order to pull the trigger on it. So whether it keeps him happy, you know how this league goes, DA. It's a results-based and driven league, right? So if they do well, I'm sure he'll be happy about it. If they don't, I don't think he will. I don't think he's going to go back and say, well, I approved it, so I have no right to be upset. Like, I don't think that's how that works, right? But
no, it's not how it works.
You know, for me, I know people are saying, oh, they gave up a lot, and which is fine. I think it's fine to give up a lot for somebody who you think is really going to help you do what you do. I think my problem with the trade or the deal is I don't think it fundamentally changes how they operate in half court offense, right? I don't see Jrue Holiday as this great distributor or setup artist who's going to just make sure Giannis gets the ball when and where he likes it, and Giannis is not expending as much energy, like 25 feet away from the basket and trying to create like he did in the playoffs. That being said, the Holiday move doesn't happen in a vacuum. I think the Bogdanovich trade is also a great one for them. They've definitely upgraded their talent when you think about Jrue going from Eric Bledsoe and George Hill to Jrue Holiday and Bogdanovich. I think that's certainly an upgrade. I just don't believe functionally they change how they operate on offense. Like, functionally in the playoffs is going to be Giannis trying to beat guys one-on-one. And when he kicks out to Jrue Holiday and Bogdanovich, they're going to be attacking collapsing defenses. And maybe they'll be better at it than the guys before them, but I don't think it's going to be meaningfully better. I'm on record as being not very impressed by these moves. Just me.
Ooh, I disagree. Disagree.
Go ahead, though.
I think that these are the perfect moves for the Bucks, because you go back, you watch Jrue Holiday play in that playoff, those two playoff series with Anthony Davis. He worked perfectly off of a big, multi-talented, versatile offensive big man. The way that he attacked creases, the way he was able to play in pick and roll, he was awesome. And then the really underrated move, I think, is getting Bogdan Bogdanovich. That dude is really talented.
Yep.
If you go back and you look at his track record over in Europe, back when he was playing EuroLeague, back when he was playing in the Turkish League, like, we're talking like multiple MVP awards, multiple finals MVP awards. This guy consistently steps up in the biggest moments. He is absolutely fearless in a way that, like, look, guys, like, I don't think I'm breaking news. Like, it felt like the Bucks at times, a lot of their perimeter players were afraid to take the shot in that series against Miami.
Right.
Like, they didn't want it at that level. Guys like Bogdan, guys like Jrue, they're comfortable taking those shots in a real way. I think that this is a much more confident offensive team now than they were, 24 hours ago.
Yeah. I would say this. I'm a big believer in what Casey Stern, my friend who works with Turner, who loves baseball and covers baseball, always says about you can't trade your top minor league players for a 1 year rental for a pitcher, even if that pitcher helps you win a championship. And Casey always says prospects are cool, parades are cooler. And I agree with that.
100%.
I don't care about no damn draft picks, especially the picks that the Bucks have. As long as Giannis is on your squad, you're picking in the late 20s.
Yep.
Those picks are meaningless, essentially, especially this year's pick. Who the hell was Milwaukee going to take at 24 that was going to crack their rotation next year? You know, nobody. And when you have 1 year to prove to Giannis that you're serious about winning a title, I mean, again, this year's pick doesn't mean anything. So it's essentially, to me, you're trading two firsts. You're not losing two other firsts. You're swapping. So you're still going to get the picks. They're just going to be a little later. Who cares? If you have Giannis, you don't care where those picks are. So you traded two firsts to me for Jrue Holiday. Now, that's a lot still. But I think Sam's right. Jrue Holiday has played in playoff series. He played great against Portland a couple of years ago, if you guys remember when AD was still there and New Orleans upset Portland in that first round. He was terrific in that series. He's a very good defender. Guys around the league keep telling you consistently he's one of the best on-ball defenders in the league. Essentially you gave up Dante DiVincenzo for Bogdanovich. And again, if I'm Milwaukee, I make that trade 100 times out of 100. All due respect to the other guys in the deal. Now, how do they fill out the back end of their roster? That's going to take some doing and some creativity, and they're going to have to hit on a second round pick or picks in all likelihood to make it worth their while. But they will find a minimum guy, a minimum vet to play with that group to come off the bench and have no problem with it. Somebody will do that. Maybe two people will do that. I think they'll get it done. And it's not perfect, but for what they had to work with, I think they did about as well as you can expect in terms of surrounding Giannis with more defenders and two guys that aren't afraid. I think Sam's exactly right. Not afraid to shoot and can make those shots. Now, we'll see if they make them. They may not make them, but they're not afraid to take them. So I think it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think?
And I think I think just to follow up on what Sam mentioned, I might be a little down on Jrue Holiday's playmaking ability, right? Like maybe he is more dynamic in pick and roll than I'm giving him credit for, which if he is, then this deal makes a lot more sense to me. And I think another thing that people are underrating is, you know, part of what sunk them against the Heat was just their inability to diversify their defensive schemes. I don't know that the two guys that they brought in actually do that better than Eric Bledsoe, who people don't realize is like an excellent defensive player.
Yes.
And George Hill, who, you know, he's getting up in age. He's not what he used to be, but I'd still say he's probably better than Bogdanovich, right? Like, so I don't know that their defense has gotten any better, and obviously their coach hasn't changed. And so, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I guess I'm just not as excited about the deal as everybody else is for the Bucks. And maybe it's because I would have been more excited about seeing somebody like Chris Paul come in there. Mm-hmm. And perhaps Giannis was like, that guy's old. I don't need him over here, whatever. But right. that's just me.
See, I think the bottom line is, go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say you hit it on the head with Budenholzer at the end of the day. Like, they need Mike Budenholzer to be willing to diversify his defensive scheme and be willing.
Miami sliced them up, man.
Yeah. And that's going to be the key. That's going to be the absolute key here for this team. If it doesn't work through the, and I guess we won't know if it's not going to work, because this is going to be a great regular season team, right? Like, we have no doubts that they're going to roll through whatever the equivalent of a 60-game winner is in 72 games. The big key is figuring out, will Mike Budenholzer be willing to adjust in the playoffs? Because right now we have ample evidence throughout his career in Atlanta and throughout his career in Milwaukee that he is a, we're going to run the scheme guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, he's going to have to change or he will be changed. You know what I'm saying? And I can't imagine. The bottom line with all these deals to me is you don't make these deals if Giannis doesn't tell you I'm signing, you know, I will resign if you do this, if you do these things. And maybe
one
it wasn't
would think.
Literally. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Maybe it wasn't literally get Jrue Holiday and get Bogdan. Maybe it was just get me two better players. But you get the thumbs up from the franchise player before you pull the trigger on these deals. So I would be shocked if we don't see Giannis sign a long-term deal. And if I'm Milwaukee, what the hell else do I care about? You know what I'm saying? Like, I got the freak for at least a few more years. I can take another couple of cracks at this and maybe we break through. Maybe we don't, but at least I got the best player who's played on this franchise for 40 years. Yep. On my squad for another few years.
So yeah, that's all I want to say that too. If Giannis resigns, who cares? Who cares if this is more successful or not than last year? It doesn't matter. If you get this guy to sign on the dotted line for 5 more years, everything is worth it because this guy makes your franchise relevant by himself. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So what did you guys, I thought it was a low key deal that I really liked, which was Portland getting Robert Covington. Wonder what you guys thought of that. Gave up 2 firsts. And again, that's a lot for Robert Covington. I get it. But if I'm Portland, I like Robert Covington as a stretch four. I like Robert Covington defensively. To me, it's worth the investment. I look at it as an investment in a guy that can really play with Dame and CJ throughout the rest of their prime. But you guys tell me, what do you think?
Yeah, I loved it for both of them. I thought it made total sense for both Houston and Portland. On Portland's side, they really need that, like, you know, four-man power forward defender to be just like a monster in help defense and a monster on the weak side whenever they drop Jusuf Nurkić, because you have to be able to kind of bait guys into making that cross-corner kick. You have to be able to bait guys into being able to, you know, try and end up screwed on defense or on offense when you're driving. It's a really important position, and you need some weak side rim protection with it as well for whenever Nurkić kind of gets caught in the gap. So it's a perfect fit there. And obviously he's a shooter as well. On Houston's side, I like it regardless of what they end up deciding to do with James Harden. Like, look, I agree with you. I think it looks like a teardown, DA, but like, Even if they decide to keep Harden, the Covington deal didn't really work for them because, for instance, in the Lakers series, all the Lakers did, because Houston runs this switching style defense, was involve Covington in the primary action and get him switched onto a guy, right?
Yeah.
Get him switched onto a guard. Get him switched onto LeBron. Get him switched onto Anthony Davis. And it just didn't work. He is not as good of an on-ball defender as he is an off-ball defender.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you get two first-round picks. Even if you end up deciding to keep James Harden, I would venture those two first-round picks, you're probably going to be able to move those on easier to go get help for Harden than you are moving Covington on. So
yeah,
I think they're probably going to move Harden at the end of the day. Like, it seems like that's the direction it's going. You would certainly know better than I do, DA. But, like, I kind of like it regardless of how this goes.
Who covers the Rockets for us at The Athletic and I are just, it's just posting now a long story on what the hell happened in Houston. But yeah, his point, and I think it's a good one, and this speaks to your point, Sam, is that, you know, Covington on a micro ball team is really valuable. Like, he's exceptionally valuable. But if they're just going to go back to being kind of conventional, you know, under Steven Silas going forward, he's not quite as valuable to them. You know what I mean? Like, he, so from that standpoint, it makes sense for them to move on and you get two first for him. I think I agree with you. I think that's a pretty good deal for Houston. And I also agree. And it's kind of the statement, operating statement of our piece, is that whether it happens, you know, next week or next month or next year, it looks pretty clear that Harden's going to move. They're going to move Harden. It's just a matter of what deal is out there that gets them to yes. And it's out there somewhere. And it, whether it's Brooklyn or somebody else, there is a deal out there to get James Harden. So I think it's pretty inevitable, which is just shocking to me just because it's happened so fast. You know, it's just,
yeah, that's on the Houston side. And I think, you know, our colleague John Hollinger, right after they lost, was like, they're going to have to move James Harden.
Yeah,
credit
right,
to John
right.
for saying that. Like, basically, immediately, it's like the team's not really going to get better under the present circumstances. And why would they want to keep Harden under that circumstance? And why would Harden want to be there? It would seem to be like this is the direction that it was heading in the first place. And I think, you know, if I was Houston and I had James Harden under contract for 3 years, I'm absolutely playing him next year for sure. And then I'll take my chances next offseason. Like, look, I got a superstar with 2 years left on his deal.
Yeah.
Let me hear what you
back
guys
up
got.
The Brinks
like,
truck, right?
If come on now, if, right, if right. Drew Holiday right, right. is getting, you know, three first rounders right. and a couple of pick swaps, let me hear what you guys got, right? And so I think trading Covington in that regard is, you know, you could say that Trevor Ariza is clearly an inferior player at this point in his career. And who knows? Because, like, Houston's management is so unpredictable now that I don't know what they want to do with that first round pick, right? I think another team, you might say, oh, they got that first round pick. They could use that to sort of make up the difference in talent between Ariza and Covington and figure out how to get the roster situated that way. But with Houston, we don't know whether they're coming or they're going. So, you know, I'm interested to see what they do. I just find it laughable that a Brooklyn package involving Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie would be enough to get it
I can't
done
I can't
for like Harden,
I don't believe it
like
for a second,
yeah.
That's insane to me. Like, he's so much better than anybody who's come onto the market since basically AD. And, like, you know, he's way better than Paul George. He's way better than Jrue Holiday. He's way better than, Brad Beal, right? Like,
he's much better, in my opinion.
Like, yes, Brad Beal by himself doesn't get you 45 wins the way James Harden does. No matter what, Brad Beal by himself gets you 19 wins. I mean, like, I'm just saying, like, and I like Brad Beal,
my guy, but, like that. You know, come on, he gets you 30. Come on.
I'm just saying.
I can't clown my dude like that.
I'm just saying. So, you know, because it's Houston, I'm confused by everything they do ever since new management came in, starting with the Harden deal. So, I mean, the Westbrook deal. So we'll see. Now, Portland, to get back to them, a team that actually, you know, has sound management, actually does things that you could be like, that makes sense. They finally replaced Aminu, who was so good for them. And they struggled to fill that Aminu role ever since he left the team. And I think Covington slots perfectly into that. Obviously upgrades their defense. He's the perfect type of guy to play next to a Dame and a CJ who, you know, they have their defensive issues and they're really ball dominant. So you need guys that can just spot up and shoot, maybe, you know, score off of cuts and things like that. So he's perfect for what they're trying to do.
And off of Waz, like, I've been trying to figure out who the best offer is for James Harden. Like, I've been trying to figure out, like, where is it? And Warriors fans in, like, the league are going to melt down. Really?
What would you do?
Because
are we putting Klay Thompson in this deal?
No, because the draft lottery odds, if I'm Houston, I'm trying to tear this thing down.
I am
tearing it down to the studs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have the number two pick, and it's really hard to go out into the future and actually guarantee yourself the ability to get a high pick because the lottery odds are so flat now. Right. So if you can say that you're getting the number two overall pick, plus you're getting that Minnesota pick, which I don't know about you guys. I don't think Minnesota is very good next year, even though they have this number one overall pick. Like, the West is just too competitive. So you get those two picks. You get maybe a far out into the future Golden State pick after Stephen Curry, James Harden, 35 years old and everything. You know, you get Andrew Wiggins, you get Eric Paschal, right? You go out and maybe you get Kevon Looney. I think you have to get Kevon Looney to make the money work. I think that's probably the best deal out there for them, other than one other one I thought of. What if you added
I think Philly's going to make a run at it, for sure. Yes.
And
Simmons?
What if you did, what if it was a three-team deal with Ben Simmons going to Golden State, all of the picks going to Houston. So you can get number 2 and number 21 and number 34 and number 36 in this draft. You can get the Minnesota pick in 2021. You can maybe go out and get a future Philadelphia pick. You can go out and get a future Golden State pick far out. I would imagine that Golden State probably does that for Ben Simmons, right? Like three first round picks, Andrew Wiggins, Kevon Looney, and Eric Paschal. I would imagine that Daryl Morey would probably be okay with giving up Ben Simmons and stuff for James Harden. And being able to pick up like a draft package like that for James Harden seems like the best deal on the market to me. I'm trying to figure it out myself. I mean, what do you guys think?
The one deal that I really kind of like, if I'm Houston, because I do need to get somebody back that is all-star caliber, I think, would be the fair thing as opposed to draft picks. Mm-hmm. And the two picks from Minnesota make perfect sense, Sam. I'm not saying you're wrong. But I would certainly, if I'm them, the deal I would, I'd go talk to Toronto about Siakam and about Norm Powell and about a whole bunch of picks because I need an all-star, which Siakam is. I need a bunch of picks. All due respect to Toronto, do I think they're going to be good 5 years from now? You know, we'll see. Maybe. To me, getting a...
Well, and to your point, DA, too, I would imagine that the Giannis signing, potentially in Milwaukee, we think, exactly. might make that's them operate a little
that's
bit
why
differently.
I'm thinking it's Toronto because well. I think that door's about to close, frankly. I mean, again, anything's possible. He could still walk. Maybe he walks to Toronto. Maybe he walks to Golden State in a year. I don't know. But it seems to me they wouldn't have made these deals if they didn't know Giannis was staying, that they didn't have a commitment from him that he was staying. So to me, go get an all-star who's still young. Now, look, he was not good in the playoffs. We all saw it, okay? But I'm going to give him a benefit of the doubt that maybe the circumstances, the bubble, all of that was weird and unusual. And I'm not going to, you know, down him as a potential all-star player. Under contract, you know, at a big number, but still under contract, which for Houston's going to matter in a post-Harden world, sure. You know?
See, if I'm Houston, I'm calling yeah. Boston. I'm calling Boston about one of their young wings. And the bottom line mm-hmm. is, to me, James Harden is a better player than either one of those two kids mm. are ever going to be. And so that's why I would be interested in it if I was Boston. And he's under contract for 3 more years, right? Like, we always hear about Boston. Oh, we were in on AD. Oh, we were in on Jimmy. Oh, we were in on Paul George. Oh, bust a move. Put one of these kids up there. Get an actual MVP candidate in your building for the first time in basically since right. Kevin Garnett. That's who I would be calling about, because those two young wings seems to still have incredible reputations in the NBA as far as their potential and yada, yada, yada. So that's who I'd be calling about. I would be calling about a Simmons or Tatum or Jaylen Brown, because yes, I want to try to figure out how to draft the next guy. And Houston, obviously we know they gave up a lot of draft capital swinging for the fences for Westbrook, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. But I personally, because I don't like young guys, I would want to see somebody who I've actually seen be young and flash NBA superstar potential.
And for what it's worth, Waz, I would bet you that the deal looks closer to what you guys are saying than what I'm thinking, because if you think about Houston right now, Tillman Fertitta, like the whole Tillman Fertitta thing is like, or Tillman Fertitta is broke thing. Like, look, Tillman Fertitta is richer than all of us combined magnitudes of hundreds and thousands, right? But he still doesn't like to lose money. And a part of this is like, Houston is probably going to be one of those 5 to 10 cities that allow fans into the arena this year, just given the way that state's political ecosystem works. So are fans going to be as willing to come in and pay money and risk getting COVID if they believe COVID exists for a product that is less than exciting to them? So I would bet you that you guys are right, that those are the kind of deals they look at, because I would bet you those are the kind of deals that Fertitta is willing to do. But man, if I was them, I'd be tearing this thing down to the studs. I would want a 50-50 shot at keeping a top 4 pick next year, because their pick swaps are protected 1 through 4. I would want to get as much potential high-end, like, superstar talent as possible.
People think Jason Tatum is like, I don't even know. He's like a cross between the next Jordan, Kobe, and LeBron, right? Like, that's how people view him. But for me, and this will shock a lot of people, because, and then by shock, I mean the opposite of that, honestly, because I've been probably the most down. I've been the most down on Jason Tatum as anybody has ever been who covers the league. And I just feel like, you get a James Harden in there again with 3 years left on his deal. He's just a more dynamic offensive player than anybody you could possibly get in there. And to me, you should be dangling one of those two young guys for precisely this type of player, right? Like, a known quantity who is under contract for more than 1 or 2 years. I think that would make them excellent. But, you know, that's just me. I know that's blasphemy for people who think that, you know, Jason Tatum is Dr. J, Larry Bird, and Michael Jordan roll into one. But, like, you know, to me, Boston should seriously be looking into acquiring James Harden.
Well, it's a good place to pivot because to the draft, because as Sam, I'm sure, knows, Boston's offering all of their draft picks. Yeah. They're offering everything under the sun to move up. So certainly they have the draft capital to put something on the table along with one of those two young players in a potential deal for Harden, Sam. But so do you think, Sam, let's start with that. Sure. Do you think Boston can package these three picks and move up into the lottery as they're trying to do?
Oh, man, I would say yes. I think that they I don't think they're going to end up being able to do it. Just okay. Kind of talking around to teams, it seems like there's a pretty real cutoff. And this kind of matches where I'm at as well. There's a pretty real cutoff after LaMelo Ball 1, James Wiseman 2, Anthony Edwards 3, and then some mix of, and those three can go in any order, and then some mix of Onyeka Okongwu, yeah, Isaac Okoro, Tyrese Halliburton, Denny Avdia, Obi Toppin, and Pat Williams. That's 9. So 9 guys. And then some teams have Devin Vassell a little bit higher. Some teams have Killian Hayes and Kyra Lewis a little bit higher, right? But it's something like 9 yeah. to 11 guys, basically, where teams see like a very real cutoff. So I think a lot of teams are convincing themselves that they want one of those guys. So it's going to be harder for Boston to move up. Now, if I was a team like Washington, for instance, and Onyeka Okongwu does not fall to me, I would draft Onyeka Okongwu if Washington is there and he's there at 9 because he's a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. I have him at number 4 on my board. I think he's one of the surest things in this draft to at least be a quality NBA starter.
There's no way he's there at 9. Zero chance.
I would be surprised. I have it mocked right now because the order says to mock it that way. I think that a team like San Antonio is, you know, a potential team to move up. A team like Boston, you know, there are rumors that they like Isaac Okoro. There are rumors that they like Onyeka Okongwu. Like, someone is going to try to move up for Onyeka Okongwu. So if he is not there at number 9, if I was Washington and Boston's offering me a ton of picks to move up, I would say, hell yeah, give me those picks. I actually kind of like the depth from 20 to 45 in this draft. I think there are going to be a lot of good role players, and Washington could really do well to pick up those guys.
You guys are really entertaining this Boston moving up stuff. How many times is Boston going to float?
See?
Yo, you know we offered this and we offered that. You know we did. You know we was in on this. How many times are we going to do this with the Angel regime, man?
See, this is why
these dudes never pull the trigger.
This is why I was initially hesitant, because 100% they do it every year. They do it every single goddamn year where this is a thing. And this year, I think it's more real because they have a real roster crunch at the bottom of their roster. They have like 14 guaranteed guys already. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Gordon Hayward, obviously. And they have some guys that they can get rid of, right? Like, they have Carson Edwards, they have Vincent Poirier, they have Enes Kanter, right? Yeah. Like, they have ways to maneuver around this roster crunch. Shimmy Ogilvy and Brad Wanamaker, not bringing those guys back. But at the end of the day, they're also competing for a title, and I don't think they want to use 3 draft picks at the end of their roster, in addition to the 3 that they used last year, and have 40% of their roster be first and second year guys.
Guaranteed first round money.
Yeah, that aren't necessarily super high level difference makers at this stage. So I think that part of it, I think the logic behind it makes more sense than it ever has.
But it's
tough to find the team at the top, I think.
What if I told you they were trying to get to 2? And I'll let you fill in who you think will get them to 2. And it's not the 3 first round picks, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'll be honest, I would not move Jaylen Brown for number 2. If the Warriors were willing to do Marcus Smart for number 2, like Marcus Smart and 14 or something for number 2.
Yeah.
I think Boston would entertain that, to be honest.
I think Boston would too.
Yeah. I think that would be a very potential outcome.
I don't know if Golden State would entertain it, but I think Boston might.
Yeah. And by the way, like, you know, here we are, like, I'm talking about James Harden being potentially in the mix at number 2, right? And Ben Simmons being in the mix and Boston's coming in with Marcus Smart. Like, I don't know if that's going to get it done, but you know, I'm intrigued by that at the very least if I'm Golden State and nothing better comes through, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right. No, absolutely. And that gets us into what, you know, what Golden State is thinking about. Let's say for the sake of argument, because, you know, we had John Krasinski on last week and he doesn't think Minnesota's going to take Ball at one.
Yeah.
He thinks it's more likely they go Edwards, which would make sense. But let's say they take whichever one. They take Ball or Edwards one, and whichever one they don't take one, I would imagine Charlotte takes it three, because I still think Golden State's got to take Wiseman, right?
That's everything that I've been told, is that the most likely guy that they would draft is Wiseman.
Yeah. It just makes too much sense, right? Yeah. I mean, they need it. They've needed a big. He's a pretty imposing and, you know, potentially dominant big. You got to fill that place after the Splash Brothers age out, and he might be the best chance of doing that. Because the other guy, you just don't know about Ball and Edwards. No guarantee, right? No guarantees. So
yeah, I've concerns
still,
with
still
both.
Should be very good.
Yeah, I have concerns with very both. Good.
I'm just confused as to why. Is it just a you know, something of a circumstantial thing where the teams that have the top two picks kind of, quote unquote, don't have any use for Lonzo, for LaMelo Ball, even though, you know, I'm not a D'Angelo Russell guy, so I don't know why it was like I would have that dude and be like, I can't take any Ball dominant guys because I have D'Angelo Russell entrenched. But is it just the virtue of the teams at the top? Because it was seen, you know, 7 months ago, eight months ago, that LaMelo Ball was considered the guy with the most, you know, the highest upside between his size, his feel for the game, his athleticism, that mixture, he kind of trumps everybody else in those regards, right? Like Anthony Edwards has all this athleticism and he has good size, but nobody respects his feel for the game or IQ or just, you know, high level basketball stuff. And I would say the same about Wiseman, whereas Lonzo, I keep calling him Lonzo, LaMelo Ball, everybody agrees that like his passing is on another level. And, you know, maybe he could get his shooting to where it needs to be. And he has great size and he has enough athleticism. What is it that he's not in the mix at the top two anymore? Nobody's like trying to jump ahead to try to scoop him in these top two picks.
So I think he is in the mix, I'll at least say. I have moved Anthony Edwards up to number one. I do think that Edwards is more likely to go now at number one. Here's the problem with Minnesota. Minnesota caved to Karl Towns a little bit and went out and decided to trade for his friend, right? And
that always works.
Right.
His friend in D'Angelo Russell, who is a very good basketball player. Like, I don't mean to like shit on D'Angelo Russell hour here, right? But he is not one of the 10 best point guards in the NBA either.
No,
so if you can go out and get a LaMelo Ball, that's what I'd be doing. But it also probably pisses off D'Angelo Russell, and you probably can't trade D'Angelo Russell because that will piss off your franchise centerpiece in Karl Towns. So,
he can't play off the ball. I just don't think D'Angelo Russell can play off the ball. He's got to have the ball.
Yep.
And obviously LaMelo's got to have the ball for this to make any sense. So how does that work?
And by the way,
I don't think it does.
Sneaky thing is Anthony Edwards has always played with the ball in his hands too. So, like, there's a thought that pushing him off ball will unlock him a little bit as a cutter and as a, you know, off ball mover, and it'll help him with shot selection. He's never done it in his career. Like, I'll tell you that. Like, this is not something he is used to doing throughout his career. He's always had the ball in his hand. So, I think that that's projection in some way, and that's okay. The NBA draft is projection. It's a massive amount of projection because you don't take guys who are 19 years old to be what they are at 19 years old. But I don't know. Like, I think like it's pretty clear to me, like, I would take LaMelo at number one and just not think twice. I would try to I'd try to trade the pick first. Like, I'd see what's out there on the trade market.
Right.
But if there's nothing out there, I think LaMelo's the guy for me, but I also am a lot higher on LaMelo than, you know, some people are, I guess.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Sam, does it make sense for... See, here, it, to me, in a perfect world, LaMelo goes 3 to Charlotte. I think it just feels so many different agendas, I think, for... Sure. Maybe it's not... But to me... Charlotte so desperately needs a star down there, yep. You know, somebody that can really become a star. And they just don't have a lot of juice down there right now. And this kid has a chance. Now, we don't know the shot, all the defense, all of it. I grant you, all of that is a problem potentially. But he's got a chance to be a star. Yep. And to have someone like that locked up, you know, and you build around him for a couple of years and you see how far you can grow it. They don't have to move up to 1 to do that, do they? I mean, if they – like, to me, if I'm them, either I get Ball, who's perfect, or I get Edwards, who's still really good, and somebody I can build around as well. So they don't have to move up to 1 to take Ball, do they?
Well, I'll tell you, if they move up to number 1, I don't think they're taking either of them. I think they're taking Wiseman. Just from –
You think they take Wiseman? Okay.
Yeah, just from everything that I've been told. And this goes back, like, before the lottery even. Like – that they've really liked Wiseman throughout the course of the season. So, and obviously he did not play this season, but the front office has been fans of Wiseman throughout the course of the season. So,
yeah,
if they do that, I think they're moving up to get Wiseman. I would personally not do that. I agree with UDA. I would absolutely just hold pat at number 3, see what falls, and I'm going to be happy with any of those 3 guys. I don't know if that's what they're thinking. If I was you, I would pray it's LaMelo Ball that falls as opposed to James Wiseman as well. But again, I have LaMelo Ball at number 1. So I'm, you know, you're kind of preaching to the choir here, I guess. But
Sam, a couple of questions. First, I want you to articulate to our listeners why you like LaMelo as opposed to Anthony Edwards or Wiseman.
Sure. So LaMelo Ball, I think, is going to enter the NBA as a top 10 live dribble passer from the jump. Like, he is that good as a ball handler who can gain separation. He's incredibly creative. The way that he reacts to the defense and the way that he thinks through getting past the first level of the defense, you know, some guys, you know, they have all these moves in their tool bag and they can set guys up and then they don't know how to actually blow by, right? He can get by. Like, he knows how to react to a defense. He knows how to read the first primary defender's hips and then blow by and see where his weight's leaning and then get past him. The second part is he's unbelievable at reading the second and third levels of the defense. You look at some of the passes he makes, they're incredibly intuitive. And that's where the difference is between him and Lonzo. Lonzo is a great point guard at running the break, leading out in transition, and keeping the ball moving on offense. He's almost more of a secondary ball handler, though, in the half court.
Right. He's not Drew a Holiday, pick and roll sort of dynamo.
Right. LaMelo Ball is that. LaMelo Ball is a pick and roll monster who can break down any guy in front of him that he wants. So I really like that guy. He's 6'6". He has the ability, I think, to at some point finish at the rim once he gets stronger. He's a really good floater game already. And a lot of, like, I know he shot 25% from 3 this year. A lot of that comes down to shot selection.
Yeah, they were just terrible looks. Terrible looks.
And part of it is accountability as well. Like, it's accountability. with in the NBL.
Oh, like, you mean he didn't take the seventh division in Australia seriously? That's crazy.
100%.
I can't imagine why he wouldn't take that seriously.
This gets to what a lot of people have, you know, a lot, and you've talked to a lot of these people, I'm sure, as well, Sam, that this is part of the concern.
Yeah.
Is that he's never been challenged at any level that he's played at. Going back to high school.
Yep.
You know, and then Lithuania, and then this, and then Australia. And it's really less about the quality of the competition as the kind of bargain that those teams made
yep.
to get him to come play there.
Yep.
And so what happens when veteran on whatever team, you know, says, give me the effing ball.
No.
You know,
and it's not even that.
And how does he respond to that? You know, how does he respond to a coach that says, hey, you have to do a better job getting this guy shots. You're not doing a good enough job.
It's,
you know, does he accept that coaching or does he shrink from it?
It's that everything, like you said, has been catered to him on the court, right? Like, he's gone through, like, I don't care what people will say when I say this, he's gone through adversity off the court. You get pulled out of high school and have to move to fucking Lithuania in the middle of winter. Like, that's real adversity that you have to
figure out. That's grown man shit, for real.
Yeah, like, his mother had a stroke, and, like, in the middle of this, like, while she was recovering, had to move to Lithuania. He's had to adjust to moving to Australia. So, I don't mean to say that he hasn't gone through adversity and fought through it. He has not gone through on-court adversity and fought through it. And I think that that is where NBA people get concerned. What happens when things aren't catered to him? You know, part of the reason that I think the Warriors would be a little bit less interested in this is something that you just brought up, DA. Like, throughout the course of the year, he played like 400, 500 minutes in the NBL. I think I counted, like, it was somewhere between like 7 and 10 times where he's supposed to be tagging the backside in a pick and roll coverage where he's supposed to be like just covering the roller.
Yeah.
My man was just wiping his shoes.
Just not
literally
not there.
Wiping not there. His shoes, getting ready to jump up for a rebound to try and lead the break. And can you imagine Draymond Green seeing that? Can you imagine? he might punch him like on the court in the middle of an NBA game. Like, we might have our first like violence incident between teammates.
Is it inter or intra? I always forget. I don't know if it's inter or intra. Inter-team squabbling, brawling on the court. Yes, so I know. That
stuff's going to take time with LaMelo. But
plus, and this is the other reason why I think Charlotte would be good for him. Can you imagine what Michael Jeffrey Jordan will do to this kid? It will be a sink or swim situation if he winds up in Charlotte.
I think the good thing about that too, DA, is the level of deference that most people realize that they have to show to Michael Jordan, right? Like, somebody who's had that, you could, even if you've lived under a rock with your head completely up your own ass your whole life, you know that you got to show respect to Michael Jordan. So, that would actually be pretty cool to see unfold, honestly.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, Michael, first meeting, Michael, your father said he could kick my ass? Really? Really?
That'd be amazing.
All right.
I forgot about
How much money?
I'd love to see it.
How much money would you guys pay for a pay-per-view of Michael Jordan meeting LaMelo Ball for the first time after he drafts him and just talking immense amount of shits about his father to him?
Just about how I don't even know who your father is. What are you talking about?
No joke. I would pay hundreds of dollars to see it.
He might have. Didn't he average like 4 at Santa Monica Community College or something? I forget what it was. He did
that robust 3.2.
Yeah, I forget what it was. LeVar did.
Yeah. So I think that would be awesome if we could see how that works, because I think Michael's not stupid. He knows the kid's talented, but I would love to see him. I would love to see his methods, as they say in The Untouchables. I do not approve of your methods.
And so, I'll say this too, like, the Charlotte development staff, and I'm sorry, Waz, I'll let you go here in a second.
The Charlotte development staff
has been very good over the course of the last couple of years. You look at what they've done with PJ Washington. You look at what they've done with Devontae Graham. Cody Martin, as a second round pick, was pretty useful this year.
Right.
Like they've done really well with young players. I think that if there's one place I would like to see LaMelo land personally, among the real potential options here, I think it would be Charlotte.
Yeah, it's best of both worlds. I mean, it gives them a chance. I think it gives that franchise a chance to be relevant again, you know, and that's, I love the NBA. I want the NBA to do well. But it's only going to do as well as its weaker teams and smaller markets do, you know? So that's why I would just, I'm just hopeful that they can, it looks like, you know, New Orleans is doing fine now. I think we all agree they're doing fine. You know, Sacramento is sort of going in a direction. We'll see. But Charlotte kind of is stuck, I think, and has been stuck for a while. And I, you know, you just hope that they can figure it out. Let's move on to Chicago because that's a big market, big history, new management, though, obviously. You tell me. I mean, there's an obvious pick that they, that's been wedded to them from Jump Street, but I, you know, I can be convinced otherwise if you can.
No,
what do you think?
I'm actually kind of with you on that. Everyone I've talked to has just basically said that, you know, new general manager, I guess Mark Eversley is the general manager, but the new president of operations, Arturis Karnisovas, has been very quiet throughout this process in terms of what he's done and the way that he's gone about his business. And that's kind of the way that he operates. So,
right.
I'm not saying that like they're not interested in Denny Avdija. Every other team that I talk to, like the teams that are beneath them in the lottery, like, you know, the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 range. Most of the teams I've talked to are like, yeah, we think Chicago's going to take Denny. But I haven't gotten anyone from Chicago to say they're taking Denny. And
I'm
a little bit. I think it's like I have Denny mocked there, right? I think that Denny makes a lot of sense for them in a lot of ways. But if you told me that they're kind of a wild card here, I would not be surprised by that. I would not be surprised by that at all if they take someone like a Kyra Lewis at number 4, trying to move down to take like a Kyra Lewis, or if they take a Isaac Okoro at number 4, who I think is probably the best fit for them in this class.
Yes.
So
yes.
Look, I think it's, you know, everyone that I've talked to says, yeah, it's probably going to be Denny, but I don't know that it's going to be Denny. I haven't gotten the primary source to say it's Denny yet.
Well, let's say Denny is still available. I would think Cleveland would have to just go for the talent at that point, wouldn't they? Or, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
If Denny's available at 5.
Yeah.
I think that they would definitely take Denny. One thing that they sneaky did this offseason was they hired Liron Fannin, who is their now director of player development for their G League team. So that her family has been tied to Maccabi Tel Aviv for years. Like her father was a vice chairman. Her brother is the current strength and conditioning coach at Maccabi Tel Aviv. It's, you know, she was an assistant general manager there in the late 2000s. Like it is, all of the connections are there for them to end up with Denny. And everyone that you talk to about Denny says, all of the background is pristine. He's an incredibly hard worker, a great kid. Like everything there is going to come back great. And he's a great fit for this roster. He's like a secondary ball handler that can play with Colin Sexton, can play with Darius Garland. That to me, if that happens, I'm not even like a massive fan of Denny. I don't have him in the top 5, but that's a perfect fit for player, for team, for everything involved, where I think that I would be surprised if he got past number 5.
Okay, but I have to ask you something. How does a professional basketball player playing at a pretty good level of basketball shoot 56% from the line? How is that possible?
Yeah.
That is weird to me. Like, that's weird.
No, it is. And he doesn't.
In this day and age, especially.
Like, he's not like Andre Drummond out there in terms of touch. Right. Like, he can kind of shoot threes a little bit. Like, he can, like, he's comfortable shooting threes at the very least. They go in at like a 30 to 32% clip, but he's comfortable taking them. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on with his free throw shooting. It's very strange to me. I don't mean to like ascribe things that I don't know necessarily, but like it almost has to be like a mental block on some level, right?
Right. Well, whatever it is, if you can't play at the end of a game,
yeah,
you know what I mean. Like you just can't. I can't put you out there if you can't make a free throw. So it's going to limit his kind of learning curve if he's not on the floor at the ends of games that have where they have a chance to win. Or if he is on the floor and he makes 1 out of 6, you know, down the stretch.
Yep.
I mean, that's just bizarre to me in the age where shooting is everything, that someone could get to this level and still struggle that much from the line. Wow. That's a wild to me.
And Sam, I can't let you leave out of here as a good New Yorker without asking you about what the hell it is the Knicks are trying to do here. Because I just don't understand.
They're trying to get Russell Westbrook, but of course.
Like, I'm just like, is it Russ? Oh, is it Van Vliet? Is it Chris Paul? I haven't heard.
It's not Chris Paul anymore.
Well, obviously, right? But I haven't heard a single thing about, all right, well, this is what we think we should be doing with RJ. Or, like, I don't know, right? Like, do they think RJ is an initiator or is he a finisher? Do they need to get somebody in there who could set RJ up and make sure, like what are the Knicks doing? Like, what is happening over there?
Your guess is as good as mine. Like, I've been calling and asking everyone what the Knicks are going to do. What are the Knicks going to do? And everyone's just like, we have no idea. Because they have brought in a bunch of point guards like Kyra Lewis and RJ Hampton and Killian Hayes. They've brought in the wings like Isaac Okoro and they've brought in Devin Vassell as well. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think they're going to take Onyeka Okongwu because they have Mitchell Robinson. Like, there have been some reports out of New York that they're kind of souring on Tyrese Halliburton a little bit. I'd be like, Tyrese Halliburton was signed by CAA. These guys know Tyrese Halliburton's game really well.
Exactly. It's just which CAA they're going to take. Right?
I mean, yeah. Like,
just pick one. I don't care.
I've been kind of operating under that for a while.
Right.
If Obi Toppin gets there. So Obi Toppin, signed by CAA, obviously.
Right.
The thought is that if Cleveland does not end up with Denny, that Obi, is most likely to be their guy. So,
it's a safe pick, right?
Yeah. If Obi was, let's say that Denny gets past Chicago because Chicago goes wild card and, you know, Obi ends up down at 8, I think that makes some sense, right? That they take the guy that they recruited at CAA that, you know, they clearly at least like enough to recruit him as a client. And that kind of fits with what they have. Like, he fits well with Mitchell Robinson as a 4 next to Mitchell Robinson's rim protection abilities at the 5. So,
yeah,
I think that one is the one that makes sense. I just don't know if he's going to get there, because I think that if Denny is gone, that's probably most likely to be Cleveland's guy. So,
yeah,
the answer is I don't know. You could tell me any one of like 6 names with New York. I feel more confident that Kenny Payne convinces them that like Emmanuel Quickly is an unbelievable kid and that they should take him at number 38 than I do that they're going to do a specific thing at number 8, because it's just so, it's been so all over the map that it's really hard for me to even gauge.
Isn't Toppin a somewhat of a duplicate of Knox though?
I mean, Knox has been so horrible. The idea that you're like, I don't want to get somebody who's going to take his minutes. He's horrible.
Right.
He's horrible. His minutes have to be taken away at this point.
His minutes should go. Wow,
I mean, let's hope that Kevin Knox turns it around. I think he's still like 20 years old, but I don't think that you make draft decisions based off of Kevin Knox, given what we've seen.
Right. You know what I mean? I don't mean based off of Kevin Knox. What I'm saying is that, you know, It's not like they're a 60-win team. Let's put it this way. They've got a lot of holes. You can fill several of them before you get to his hole. You know what I mean? Like you said, there's maybe a chance. Maybe Tibbs gets it out of him, turns the light on. You never know. Or maybe he doesn't, but at least give Tibbs a year to find out, right? So to me, it's like, yeah, you could do that, but there's so many holes on that team. I wouldn't even be shocked if they took Okonwu, because as much as I like Mitchell Robinson, again, how many games did they win last year?
So what, who's untouchable in that squad? But like, I don't know that I do my draft based on, man, I got this really young guy, Mitchell Robinson. Like, I guess. Everything with the Knicks is, I guess. I don't understand what they're doing. Everything they do.
Do we think they're going to get Westbrook? That's what I want to know. Do we think they're really going to pull the trigger on that?
I think it depends.
It would be so Knicks to do that.
It's always in the mix with the Knicks.
I think it depends if Charlotte gets LaMelo or not. If Charlotte does not get LaMelo, it's more likely that they would end up with Westbrook because they wouldn't have their point guard of the future. I think that they don't really see like Devontae Graham as like their number one lead guard creator of the future. So if they can go out and get one of those guys, I think they would. There's the obvious connection of, you know, Russell being represented by Jordan Brand, or Russell advertising
Jordan
Brand. And
Michael loves him.
Yeah.
And Michael loves him.
Loves the competitiveness, loves what he stands for. Yes. Like, I think that that is real, but I think that they would, if they take LaMelo Ball, I think that that's going to end that. So it would be much more likely that they end up getting, or be much more likely that Russell Westbrook would be with the New York Knicks, I think.
Right.
Because who else?
So, Sam,
who else?
Right. Just nobody else. They're not, I mean, they can't get Harden. They don't have any assets to get Harden. So,
I mean, there's other bloated contracts that they could get. They could probably go out and try to get John Wall. Perhaps they might have an interest in Tobias Harris. Al Horford. I mean, there's plenty of other ridiculous contracts that make no sense on this team that they could go out and get, guys.
I would say give me a year with Wall, because I do think there will be a market for Wall if he shows this year that he can still play. But nobody knows that yet. Nobody's seen him play in 2 years. So you just can't pull the trigger. But after this year, if he shows, well, they're going to trade Beal anyway, so it doesn't matter. So.
But like, here's the problem that I have with that, because I agree with you. I think they're probably going to trade Brad at some point.
Yeah.
Why are you delaying the inevitable? Just why? Like, this is your time to cash in.
I wrote this a year ago that they should have traded him last summer. Yeah. You know, when they could have gotten even more for him because he had 3 years left on his contract, you know?
Yep.
Like, they could have gotten so much for him.
Yep.
But Ted needed to sell some tickets, you know, and that's what it comes down to in D.C. is that the owner didn't want to have an empty building last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's what happened. And I still would have traded him this summer, you know, this offseason. Now, I think it's not that you're running out of time, and they could still do it next summer and get a haul, because to Waz's point earlier, you got 3 firsts and 2 flips for Jrue Holiday. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, if I'm Bradley Beal, I'm like, you know, if I'm the Wizards, I'm saying, hey, come on. That's the floor for Beal, right? I mean, I have to ask for at least that.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think that that's the smart move, but we'll see what they do. I can't guarantee it. They may continue to chase unicorns. Let's get out on this. Give me one guy or two guys if you want.
Okay.
Who are going to be picked way earlier than people think.
Who are going to be picked way earlier than people
think. Way earlier. Like, they're going to be picked ninth or 11th. And everybody's going to go, what? You know, and you're going to go, hey, I understand. I get why they did that.
See, like,
I get why that guy's going that high.
I kind of mentioned this earlier, but there is like a real, like, Patrick Williams has really risen throughout this process. But like, I think people know that Patrick Williams is going to go number, you know,
he's going to Detroit at 7, right?
That's the theory, is he's probably going to Detroit at number 7. Or a team is now moving ahead of Detroit to try and end up with Patrick Williams.
Right.
So, man, a guy that I think is going to go really much earlier than what I think. I'm like so in the weeds on this shit. I can give you guys that I think will go later. Can I turn the question on its head? Maybe.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Like, I was just wondering if Sadiq Bey would go like a top 10 and just shock the world.
He could go 10. Is that possible? Yeah, like I think Sadiq Bey and Aaron Naismith like are very much potentially on the board for Phoenix at number 10.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Naismith again, like a guy that could shock people. Desmond Bane, like I think is probably going to end up going. If you told me Desmond Bane goes like anywhere 18 to 20, I think that 18 to 22, I think all those teams like him, but that's not top 10. The guy that I think that people have gotten a little bit out ahead of is Killian Hayes. When I talk to teams about Hayes, it's more like, you know, we think he's like an end of the lottery guy, maybe like a mid first round pick. He's not super athletic, doesn't have a right hand. You know, the jump shot is still developing. But then like you look on the internet and Killian Hayes, you know, some people have him at
six,
number five,
you know, seven.
I love Kevin O'Connor, one of like the nicest human beings on the planet. Kevin has him at number one. Right. So. Yeah. There are people that are reputable and smart, like Kevin, that really love Killian Hayes. And in general, I can't get that same kind of enthusiasm for him from NBA teams. And if you told me he's on the board for Houston's pick now at 16, I don't think I would be totally stunned by that at all. And the other guy that I think would make headlines if he was to fall is Cole Anthony.
It seems like the bloom's off the rose there.
Yeah. Teams that I've talked to a couple that just like don't have him on their board. But if he goes anywhere from 10 to outside of the first round, it would not be a stunner to me. I think his floor is genuinely that low and that, you know, I hope that like no one goes through what Bol Bol went through last year. You know, having to wait around. And then I think he ended up leaving the green room and, you know, ended up coming back when Denver drafted him. But, you know, I think that if there's one guy that I would point to that has potential to happen for, it would probably be Cole Anthony.
Right. Well, man, so we could do another hour on this. Seriously, it's the greatest time of the year. I mean, it's crazy.
It really is.
It's insane, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, people, this is when teams can get better and they can do it quickly. And if you hit on a guy in the lottery, it's a decade long run. You go on a decade long run in the NBA.
Yep.
If you hit on the right guy. So, man, Sam, thank you. I know it's early in Australia, man, and I appreciate you coming on so much. And I know this has been, if you haven't downloaded Sam's draft guide, what the hell is wrong with you? It is, there's nothing like it out there. And look, like you said, I've read Kevin O'Connor stuff. He's very good. Very good, very thorough, but there is nobody that does it like Sam does it. Nobody. This is phenomenal. It's an incredible amount of work. It's a must download. If you don't subscribe, you must subscribe just to get this, if nothing else. Because it's an incredible amount of work, man. And I thank you for taking some more time out to talk to us about this, man. And I appreciate it. Hope everybody is safe and happy down there. And so the draft's at 7:30 Eastern. So that would be, man, you're going to be up early, aren't you?
So here's the problem with me. I have all of my clocks set to Pacific time still because I moved from Los Angeles, right? Okay. So I'm I don't know what the fuck time it is now. Like, let's just be honest. Like, I think it's like 9 o'clock. You could tell me.
Oh, wait, maybe it'll be a little later. It'll be mid-morning for you. Mid-morning Thursday, I guess, when the draft actually takes place.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think I figured out that it's going to be like 11 o'clock.
That sounds right. I think so.
I don't know. I'm excited.
Right, it won't be too bad.
Thanks, guys. So I appreciate it. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Sam. Aussie, man, Aussie, man, Aussie.
Thank you. oi. Absolutely.
Love it.
If I ever could, Waz, I'm so chicken shit. I can't get on the plane to go to Australia. And I want to go. I want to see the Sydney Opera House with my own eyes before I die.
What, you just don't want to do the 14 and a half?
It's 14 and a half from L.A. I just can't do it.
No, you good. Just pop a Xanax, D.A. You'll be straight.
I know. That's what everybody tells me. Just knock yourself out.
I will tell you. That flight is not as bad as what you think it is going in. Because I had the same deal, right? Like when I first came here 6 years ago or whatever, I was concerned. It's not that bad. Yeah. You pop on movies. It's a great way to like disconnect for 14 hours. Like you don't have phone access. It's honestly like it's kind
if
of
I
a
could
dream.
Sleep on the plane. If I could sleep on the plane, I'd do it. I actually, well, I went down to Rio for the Olympics in 2016, and that was 9.5 from Miami. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that bad. It really wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I got through it pretty well. So I guess I could do 14. I probably could, but I still think I need drugs.
You might. It's just me. But it's, anyway. I'm telling you guys, it's worth it. My wife and I had to, you have to do a 14-day quarantine whenever you get to Australia right now because of COVID. And we did ours in Sydney, and we got out like mid-afternoon, right? Probably around like 4 o'clock here. So we walked from the hotel we were staying at to the wharf where you can like get on a ferry. And we took a ferry out right past the Opera House. It was amazing. It is one of the most beautiful scenes you will see on planet Earth. I recommend it to absolutely anybody that would ever consider not moving to Australia, but at least visiting.
No, I want to go. I want to go. I want to spend like a month there. I chickened out. I should have gone to the Olympics in 2000 there, and I chickened out, and I've always regretted that. So someday, man. Well, stay safe, and listen, everybody, enjoy the draft on Wednesday. Give us that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you hear us. By the time this comes out, there'll be 7 more trades that we can talk about next week. All right, see you.